Our next lecture will be on isochronous cyclotrons. So let's take the file again. A dear child has many names. So isochronous cyclotron is also called as sector focusing cyclotron or AVF cyclotron, which comes from azimuthally varying field. In a synchrocyclotron, the mass increase was compensated by changing the frequency. But in isochronous cyclotron, we instead increase the magnetic field with radius. But now we have a big but. We just learned from Kerr-Serber equations that for pseudonymous symmetrical magnetic fields, the magnetic field should decrease with radius. And now in isochronous cyclotron, we modify the magnetic field so that the synchronous condition is fulfilled. But it cannot be done radially because of the synchronous condition. So the magnetic field must now increase with radius, but we lose the axial focusing and that must be gained back by other means. And the question is, can the axial focusing be increased modifying the field azimuthally so that the azimuthal average of the magnetic field corresponds to the synchronous field? And fortunately, the answer is yes. And we now examine how sectors can affect the Lorentz force. So here on the left side, we have the Lorentz force, which has this term V cross B. And then we have the cylinder coordinate system, R, theta, and Z. And you can see the determinant there, which is the V cross B. And now we concentrate on the axial component to direction Z. So there we have two terms, VR, B theta, so radial velocity times azimuthal magnetic field minus B theta times BR, so the azimuthal component of the velocity times the radial component of the magnetic field. And of course, the primary motion is to the azimuthal direction. So here on these pictures, seen actually from below, so the particles go around this way or this way. Now we are looking at straight sectors first. Here, the ridge, as is called here, or hill and valley. So in the hill, the poles are closer to each other and the magnetic field is bigger. So the bending radius is smaller and hence the equilibrium orbit is sort of a, in this case, a bit triangular shape. And here, when we are going into the hill, then we are going also a bit outwards. So VR is positive. And when we are coming out from the hill to the valley, then VR, the radial velocity, is negative. Let's look at it in another perspective. So in this picture, the radius is pointing towards us and the azimuthal angle goes to the right. So we are sort of following the particle looking to the center going around here. And now the magnetic field must be to the negative Z direction so that the particle goes this way here. So that the angle theta increases. And here are the sectors where we have a smaller gap and valleys where we have a bigger gap. And of course, between the hills, we have higher magnetic field than in the valleys. So the magnetic field lines curve towards the low field region. And now, when we come here into the hill, remember, here we go the other way around. we come into the hill, and so we are going also a bit outwards. So we can and let us be here below the median plane. So here I have depicted only the radial component of the velocity. So here the particle is coming towards us, and here the particle is going away from us, so towards the center. So there's a negative radial component for the velocity. And now taking here V cross B, we can see that here there's a force pointing that way, so it has an axial component which brings the particle towards the median plane. And if it was above the median plane, again the same. And here, when it leaves the hill region, on both sides of the median plane, the force is towards the median plane. So this QVRB theta, it's all always towards the median plane. And that's called Thomas force. It's always towards the median plane, so we get axial focusing. Then the spiral effect. Let's go back and see this picture here. So here, now we just look at the azimuthal component of the velocity. And here, the magnetic field lines are curving outwards. And here, on this side, inwards. So if we use this picture here, if this is outwards, then above the median plane it's outwards, and then above the median plane on the other side is inwards. Or here, outwards and inwards here, below the median plane. So we have here, if you are on the same side of the median plane, so we have focusing, defocusing, and so forth. And from light optics, we know that focusing plus defocusing and some space between them, that is effectively focusing. So this gives an effectively focusing effect. Although every second is focusing, every second is defocusing. But totally, it is also focusing. Now let's parameterize the spiral. So this is the sector, the edges of the sector. This is the center of the cyclotron. And if we draw here a center line of this sector here, so taking on a constant radius here a curve, and then the center point here is the center of the sector, and then we have this spiral angle, which is the angle between the center line of the sector and the radius. The larger the angle is, the more spiral we have. And then we also define another parameter called flutter. It's actually a normalized variance of the magnetic field taking into the azimuthal direction. So these brackets denote average, and these are average around one circle. So this is the average of magnetic field squared, and this is the square of the average. So this here is just nothing else than the variance of the magnetic field when it go around one circle. And we divide this with the square of the average, so it's sort of normalized variance. It doesn't have any dimensions. Tesla squared divided by Tesla squared. And now we are not going to derive this equation here. So for the Kirchhoffer equations, we had only this part here. So the azimuthal beta zone frequency squared. Sorry, not azimuthal, but the axial beta zone frequency squared is minus k. And now we have here, this is just number of sectors. typically 3 or 4, sometimes higher, up to 6 over 8. And then the flutter term, plus the spiral term. So if we don't have a spiral, we have just a flutter here. And it's a series, we have just truncated it here. So there are smaller terms here. But this is enough for us to estimate whether we have enough focusing or not. There's also some change in the radial Peterton frequency. So this is, for example, for 3 sector cycles on this here, 1 plus k was for synergy symmetric magnetic field, and then we get this term here. No, there's no 2 here, but we have 2 here, but the same flutter. But this is not a problem, this radial focusing. We can see that we get enhanced radial focusing as well. And since this k is positive, now in this case, because we have to increase the magnetic field, then this here must be bigger than k in order to have real new z. Well, you can see from here that the higher the number of sectors, the smaller is the effect, but not very big. So for example, if we have 3 sectors, we have 9 divided by 8, or 4 sectors, 16 divided by 15, so close to 1. But also increasing the number of sectors, the flutter decreases. Let's go back to this picture here. So if we have the same hill gap and the same valley gap, but we increase the number of hills or sectors, then of course this distance here becomes smaller because we have more of the sectors, and also the sectors will become narrower. And then an ultimate is that we have just very, very small gaps between the hills. And seen from the median plane, it looks almost like one surface, solid surface here, smooth surface. So there is no variation in the magnetic field. Okay, this is how the magnetic field in our cycle from this K130 looks like. We have spiral sectors, and it's on the sectors, it's quite flat. If you look at this picture here, so this is the lower pole, you can see that the hill gap and also the valley gap decreases with radius. This is one way of increasing the magnetic field with radius. But in our cyclotron, like in many other cyclotrons made by Scanitronics, the hills are flat, but the average width the relative width of the hill increases with the radius, because we are now taking the average around one turn, and the portion of the hill becomes larger when we go outwards. So here, if this is the maximum field that we have, this here is something like 2.1 Tesla, and in the valley 1.3. Let's look at the synchronous condition. So the magnetic field must follow the mass increase. So from the omega c equation, we just now solve for B, magnetic field, and here we have the true mass. And this mass here is relativistic gamma times rest mass. So here, the gamma is 1 over square root of 1 minus V over C squared. And now we estimated that the particles travel on a circular orbit. As you saw from the pictures before, especially when we have small number of sectors, and practically 3 is the minimum, then it's a bit sort of triangular shape. It was a bit exaggerated in the picture. But anyway, so this is a sort of approximation, but good enough for our purposes here. So the velocity is just radius times the omega c. This is constant, the omega c now. We want to have the opening frequency constant so that we can have constant acceleration frequency. So this gives the radial dependence of the magnetic field. Okay. And then how do we change the magnetic field? So this is hidden when we look at inside the cyclotron. This on the other side we have the liner, and on the other side of this plate here we have the acceleration area. This comes on top of the poles. And here we have 15, in this case, 15 concentric coils. And we adjust the current in each of these coils to adjust the magnetic field. So this picture shows the profiles of these trim coils. So they have the gradient at different radii corresponding to their own radii. And so in this region here, it's about flat, and then we have the gradient, and it comes then towards zero here. And now we can combine these and setting currents individually for each trim coil, these trim coils here, so that we can get the desired radial profile of the magnetic field. Let's look at the field shape radially. We can get an equation for this K and the energy. So K was defined like this. So this is a derivative of magnetic field normalized like this. And then we can get B zero out of the B. You remember the B was this B zero constant divided by this factor, which depends on radius. Okay, now we are here. And now do the derivation. And we end up here. So we move this R here. So we have omega R squared, which is V squared divided by C squared. That's beta squared, relativistic beta. And here we have B zero over B, and that's 1/γ. And here we have 1 minus, this is actually V squared minus C squared, so, and the square root of it is gamma. So it's gamma to the third power. So we have gammas here, different gammas. And we can make it prettier. And what we have left is that the field index K is gamma squared minus 1. This corresponds to the isochronous field. So now, depending on the particle, the maximum energy, then we can get the limit for the K at the extraction. So the K increases with the radius because the energy increases with the radius. Now, when we put this in to this equation here, I have now omitted the number of sectors here, because that gives practically 1. Okay, or a bit more. I'm putting this K here. We have this inequality. So we put on this side the factors that depend on the cyclotron, so the flutter and the spiral angle, and on this side, but the things that depend, or this gamma depends on the energy. And here the gamma is the total energy, so kinetic energy plus rest mass energy divided by rest mass energy. So we can use this in both directions. So if we are designing a cyclotron, we want maximum gamma, typically for light ions, and meaning protons, then we can see how much flutter we must have, and how much spiral angle we must have. Of course, this cannot be infinitely large. When we have very, very high spiral, then also the distance between the hills becomes smaller radially, and the flutter decreases. And it's in many ways, it is not so nice. Now, one thing about the flutter. So for room temperature cyclotrons, the magnetic field is always less than 2 Tesla. So the iron is not saturated. So practically the flutter doesn't depend on B. Well, it starts to depend on when we are approaching saturation. But before saturation, the magnetic field can be thought of or sort of that we calculated it from scalar potential. So the magnetic field on the iron surface, the pole, is perpendicular it's parallel to the normal of the surface. So then it doesn't really depend on the value of the magnetic field. It just depends on the geometry. So for room temperature cyclotrons, where the maximum magnetic field is less than 2 Tesla, we can say that that the maximum gamma or velocity or energy per nucleon, they are related. So it's limited by the magnetic geometry. But for superconducting cyclotrons, the magnetic field is much higher than the saturation field. Actually, it's 2.14 Tesla for soft iron. And then only the variance is constant. We will come to this later when we are looking at magnet design. So the iron is saturated, so the magnetization M is constant, and magnetization current Nabla across M is zero. But there is magnetization current on the vertical surfaces of the sectors, and only there. Such currents that give the azimuthal variation. So the variance is constant, but the flutter is variance divided by b squared. And that leads to a focusing limit, so that this focusing limit Kf, we don't now go to this how it would be calculated. But the energy per nucleon is proportional to constant, device constant focusing K times Q squared divided by A squared. Now some historical pictures from Henry Blosser's lectures from years back, actually tens of years back. And here, and you can see also this from USA, so the inches from MSU. So this is flutter for their cyclotron. And by one of the old cyclotrons. And the flutter, of course, inside, in the center, it must be zero, because we are not moving anywhere. It doesn't really depend on to which direction we are looking at. And then we are coming out, so that the lateral distance between the hills becomes larger. Then the flutter increases. And here it's quite typical, a bit lower than 0.04. And this picture shows what kind of effect to flutter we have when we increase the number of sectors. So 3 sectors, 4 and 6 sectors. The more sectors, the lower the flutter. And also if we change the hill width, so we have here 4 sectors. So if the hill is 45 degrees, then the valley is also 45 degrees. And if we change that by 5 degrees, we can see that wider the direction, the flutter decreases. And then the valley gap and the hill gap, the same thing. So the smaller the hill gap, the 2 inches, 3 inches, and so forth, the smaller it is, the higher the flutter. And here, the dependence on the magnetic field. So this is the 2 Tesla here. It has been divided by factor of 2. So at higher, like 5 Tesla, it's 0.02, or while it was about 0.04, and at 2 Tesla, and now here it's something like 0.02. Well, here the gap has been smaller, because it's much bigger than 0.04. Anyway, you can see the dependence on magnetic field. And here we have a stop and look at separate sector cyclotrons in the next lecture.